Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We come your way on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we archive the podcasts on the radio show's page at richarddugan.com, and we also link to our guests. We'll be giving you that website shortly, and so we would like you to basically go there and continue your research and investigation, because what we're going to talk about today, I think, is going to benefit everybody, yours truly included. Couldn't hurt. I've struggled for many, many years, folks, with the whole concept of acquiring wealth, especially when it comes to dollars and cents, and sort of, put it off to say, you know, there's always an exchange in the universe, and I'm never undercharging myself, that the universe will see to it that there's a balanced exchange, and I will be taken care of, even as the birds who fly through the airs are taken care of, as a biblical passage would say. And at the same time, gosh, it would be nice to have multiple zeros before the decimal point. I mean, 6, 7, 8, I don't know. I mean, it would be nice to then be able to do the kinds of things I'd love to do without even thinking about it. Helping people that I would love to help, supporting the agencies, organizations, and programs that are near and dear to my heart. And I think that we all kind of feel that way. And then, of course, continue to do these kinds of programs to bring that kind of information to you. Well, I'm hoping our guest today will will enlighten us in that direction. We'll find out here in just a few moments as we start our conversation today, talking about the money paradigm. Isn't that the money paradigm shift right up our alley? And it has to do with living the way that you want to live. It struggles. We all struggle with it. Learning how to live and be a money magnet. We're going to talk with a money magnet and teacherpreneur. I like a new word in my vocabulary, teacherpreneur. and my guest is Timurin Langan. Is that pronounced correctly?
That is absolutely correct.
Good.
Thank you, Richard.
Yes. Right the first time. Welcome to the program. Thank you so much for joining us. And that'll be $100. Thank you so much. No.
Well, you know what? Checks in the mail.
Thank you so much. I have heard that before, and I'm still waiting. But, you know, it's interesting that we all struggle, and especially when we're wanting and trying to live that spiritual life, that spiritual path, that more metaphysical way of living, more esoteric, et cetera, et cetera. And we hear that phrase often, that if you live your life's purpose, you do that work, the money will follow. And I'm thinking that the problem with that phrase is that the definition of the phrase is not clarified, because I think people get the idea that the money will follow, meaning hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars will follow. And so we don't have a clear understanding of what that really, really means. Now, just to share quickly with you, and then I want you to expound as well. When I was working for a religious radio station, I would hire people. I was the operations manager there. And they would come in, and I would tell them what the job description was. And we would go through the whole thing of, saying, okay, here's what you're going to earn, and here's what we need you to do. And then once they started working for us, I'd say, I need you to clean the bathroom here at the transmitter site. Well, you guys don't pay me enough to do that. And I could have gone down that road, complaining and moaning and groaning that I was only making minimum wage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then I started taking a look at what I was being given to do, and that was part of what I was doing in terms of my job. I was given a slot at 7 p.m. weeknights to record interviews and play them at that time, talking with people just like you, Timurin, just like you, about subjects. And this was on a Christian radio station. And I began to realize that there was a balance. There was an exchange. I wasn't getting cash from the radio station for that extra, which I enjoyed doing, by the way. But I was getting the books and the CDs and the interviews, the experience, the contacts. I mean, it just kept growing. And I said, you know what? You don't necessarily get the exchange from the source you think you should. So let's talk about that balancing act to start off with, to help people to understand where you're coming from with this new money paradigm shift.
Right. Well, thank you so much. I tell you, you said so much in there that I wanted to just, I was just chopping at the bit to get in there because I said, wow, that is so true. That is so true. I agree. And I think what we talk about when we're making money paradigm shifts, and especially on the cusp of a new year, I think it's time that maybe instead of making New Year's resolutions, I would encourage your listeners to make new money paradigm shifts this year. And when we're talking about paradigms, I think we just need to kind of state what that means in a sense, as that refers to like these patterns and belief systems and values and thoughts that we may or may not be aware that we're having, and they play a very important role in our lives, and they shape, you know, our behavior, and they have a huge impact on the quality of our life. And so as we approach this new year, instead of making New Year's resolutions, I invite your audience to consider making some paradigm shifts as it relates to money. And then you have to take certain actions so that you can get, like you were saying earlier, those zeros behind your decimal, you know, in front of your decimal points. But I do think that you have to live your life on purpose. And I think that when you do that and you are dedicated and committed to it as you were, then increase does come. I just really and truly believe that. And I've seen that work in my life, and that's why I wrote the book, because I wanted to help others experience the same thing.
Well, now I'm curious as to what kind of paradigm, money paradigm, were you living under prior to, discovering this shift, creating it? Tell me about that. How did this come about as far as how it appears today, especially in the context of your book?
Okay. Well, in the book, I talk about some paradigm shifts, as we've seen them happen in science, and these things kind of undergird our behavior, even sometimes we don't realize it. So paradigm number one is that you can really be rich right now if just by doing one thing, and that's really kind of shifting your thoughts, shifting your beliefs. Old habit is spending money makes you feel better. How many times have we gone shopping and to the mall and we've bought things and we thought, oh, this, I'm doing this and it makes me feel better? Well, a new paradigm would be to look at money differently. See money as a tool in your life, not a tonic or a tranquilizer. And it is the tool that you use to create the life you want, to create the business you want, to create the things that you dreamt about when you were young. So that's paradigm number one. Just money is a tool, and think about it in terms of what is it in life that you value more? You were talking about purpose earlier. You know, I do believe that we were all born to do something. We were all born with certain innate gifts and talents, and in the Hebrew, that word is hanak. And so that is what we were born to do, and I do believe that once you really tap into that in some form or fashion, even if you're not doing it full-time or would like to do it full-time, or maybe it's something you can do on the side, I think when we really and truly tap into that, we tap into something that brings us great riches. Mm. And I don't think money alone is considered wealth. You know, there's certain things as peace and contentment and satisfaction. Those are really wealthy attributes as well.
Well, I so know. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, so that's paradigm one.
Make that basically start thinking differently. Using it as a tool.
Yeah.
It's like a hammer in the toolbox.
Spending money. Yeah, absolutely. The first shift is shift. The old way is thinking spending money makes you feel better. A new approach would be to think money is a tool in your life, not a tonic or a tranquilizer, and meaning use that tool to create the life you want.
You know, you know, and you brought up something interesting also. What was that word again, the Hebrew word?
Oh, Hanak, H-A-N-A-K, and I may not be pronouncing it Hanak, but it's a very interesting word, and it's so funny because when I grew up in Mississippi, I would hear my grandmother say, and I'm a Southern girl, y'all, so I would hear my grandmother say, oh, that's her bent. Oh, she's playing to her bent or his bent. And so I grew up as a Christian, and I would look, and I looked for that word, and I couldn't find it in the Bible. And so in doing research for the book, I came across the Hebrew word H-A-N-A-K, Hanak, and it simply means doing that which was innate to you, which was just a part of your personality. It is a very unique gift that is given to you, and you do that really without a lot of, you just do it because it's within you. And as a teacher, I taught first grade for many years, and I would see my students naturally draw beautiful pieces of artwork. Another would turn flips and do gymnastics. And these are just their natural gifts, and they did them beautifully. And I think that each and every person is born with something like that. And I think when you harness that and you find a way to engage in that, not everyone, I get it that not everyone is able to work in their hanok or their bent, but to the degree that you're able to do that maybe outside of work, maybe as a part-time employment opportunity, I think people do find fulfillment in that and can start, you know, fulfilling, as you said, their purpose in that degree, in some way. So, yeah, so that would be, that's the paradigm. That's paradigm number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the paradigm two is that you're already rich, but again, it requires a shift too. Because if you're, you know, the old shift is to say, the old idea, I do not have enough money. Well, the new idea is, I already have enough to live well and happily.
Yeah.
And frankly, if you're living in a first world country like the United States of America or the Western world at large, you are richer than half the people on the planet.
Hmm. Wow.
And
yeah.
We don't realize that. You are wealthier than half the people on the planet. The mere fact that you drive a car makes you richer than most people in the world.
Wow.
And that's, yeah. when I hear that, that's a big shift, because it says it proceeds from a place of the cup is not always half, the cup is half full, not half empty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny. I heard a story by Mark Cuban. I was watching a talk show many, many years ago, and he was on. And he says, it's not so much about whether you have a cup or not. It's who's pouring the water.
Ah.
And I thought, wow, that's a very powerful position to be in. And if you're living in a first world country, you are pouring your own water. And I think about it for a moment. Even if you're thirsty, and there's no water nearby, but there's something empowering and encouraging knowing that you have the ability to get yourself a cup of water. And so it's the same thing with the finances. Yes, a healthier approach would be, the old paradigm is I do not have enough money. The new approach is I already have enough to live well and happily. And then maybe I just want a little more. And that is a healthy attitude. I think it's a healthier attitude to have. So that would be how I would encourage your listeners to kind of think about that.
Okay. I know, yeah. Again, this all is, for I'm sure for many folks, it's new. It's definitely new because it is encouraging them to think differently about it. Now, there are a couple things. First of all, And of course, you opened the door to this by referring to that Hebrew word, Hanak, I believe it was, you pronounced it?
Yes, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, but that is it.
Okay. And you began to speak, and I've talked about this on this program many times, about how so much is lost in translation. But the beautiful thing about your description of that word and what it means from the Hebrew signifies exactly the big problem and why I wish that we had been taught some of these foreign languages as we were growing up in school, to be able to hang on to, and as I like this one word, to grok from Stranger in a Strange Land, the meaning of things, to really get to the core of what a word means. I know also, too, that there are a number of passages that I heard used over and over again regarding wealth and prosperity in one's life from the Christian perspective about, you know, cast your bread upon the water, you know, and so forth. And then there was the secret that came out, you know, several years ago. And I was doing an interview about it, and they were saying that they liked it, but they forgot one thing that we touched upon at the beginning of the program. And basically, this person was saying that it may be great, but the thing they left out was that what that thing that you want to attract to yourself may not necessarily be in your best interest. It may not be part of your life's purpose, but it's something that, for whatever reason, you have chosen to want it, again, which is fine. And who knows, it could do more harm than good to you. I look at it this way, though. The universe, if badgered long enough, will basically throw up its hands and say, all right, here you go. You know, here it is. And you know, you will have to, deal with the unintended consequences of it. And I think that sometimes maybe that's what happens. And I guess the best example of that is lottery winners. You and I both know the statistics. A person who is living a middle or lower income and wins millions and millions. I can't believe that the lottery has actually reached close to $1 billion at one point. A year from almost the date that they won, they're right back where they started because their mindset, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you don't, and that is why, you know, you said so many powerful things there, and that's why the shift is necessary, because if you don't make the shift, you will continue to behave in the old manner.
Yeah.
And you can, whether you've got $1,000, and I do, and I honestly believe this, you will manage $1,000 the same way you will manage $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't learn certain principles of money management and principles of financial success, then you're going to just repeat those behaviors. And we talk about that in the book. You're absolutely right. People who come into a lot of money, a large windfall, tend to lose it. And you hear about the sports personalities and entertainment personalities and people who have hundreds of millions of dollars in contracts, and within 5 years of retirement, all the money is gone.
Yeah.
So it's the same principle there. And I think, too, when you were talking about the secret, I think what I'm familiar with that work and so on, but I think what's the secret is within you sometimes, and I think we're taught to look outside of us for answers and look outside of ourselves for the solution.
Mm-hmm.
But I really believe in your secret to success, your secret to contentment, your secret to fulfillment is really within. And so to explore what's happening inside, and then it tends to manifest on the outside. And so, you know, as we approach 2018, it is rapidly approaching and rapidly upon us. I think we need to really look into, instead of just making resolutions, and they say statistically speaking, we make them in January, and by the end of January, we've reverted back to reverted to old habits. So what about making some paradigm shifts this Christmas season?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
This new year.
That's a very good point.
Yes.
It's a challenge, I know, for all of us to make these shifts, because it's new, it's foreign to us, and we're so comfortable. Well, in a manner of speaking, we're comfortable from the standpoint that, well, I know what this feels like, and because if I go this other way, I may not like the way that might feel, so I really don't want to risk getting hurt, et cetera, et cetera. And I went through this cycle financially for many years with my first and my present wife. They were going through it as well. And that was that as we got to a bill paying time, you know, and the paychecks would come in and you put them in the bank and so forth, and it was time to pay bills, and maybe you're using credit or whatever the case might be, and the money just went out about as fast as it came in. and you were worrying about whether or not you were going to be able to pay the electric bill, pay the rent or mortgage, et cetera, et cetera. And you started getting into a slippery slope where you were actually using credit to buy groceries. That's a black hole right there. And we got to a point where every month it was that way. And the only way I was able to start to pull myself out of that hole was to look back at the past based upon the fact that I was actually alive thinking about the past. I was alive in the present moment, thinking about the stress I went through in the previous months, but I'm still here. I'm still alive. Mm-hmm. I'm still paying the bills. Okay, that's fine. I didn't die. I'm not on the street. I still have a place to live, clothes to put on my back, food to put on the table, et cetera, et cetera. And so as I began to shift a little bit, I mean, and that's a small shift in one sense, eventually I got to a place where I don't get stressed out. There are other things that I now take my time up getting stressed by. But
right. But you know what? And that's what, you know what? And that's what life's all about, is making small shifts. Like you're saying, they don't have to be big and large. And as a matter of fact, when it comes to money management, it's good to take small steps. You know, and just having a strategic plan in place so that you don't have to be stressed out about how you're going to, you know, pay the mortgage or pay the rent or pay for the food bills and so on. And so we get into a lot of that in the book and on Mind Over Money. And it's about, how do we be strategic with the money we already have? How do we cut back in certain areas and look at to where we are? Maybe we're not being a strategic enough. It's like, if there's money going into areas where, what I call the waste bin, mm-hmm. where you're just simply not, for example, if you're going buying magazine subscriptions, you've got those and you're not reading the magazines, that's really a waste. If you've got 2,000 cable channels and you only watch 10, mm-hmm. you may want to cut back there. Oh, if you're going out to dinner every night, perhaps that's another area where you can cut back. And I know myself, I love coffee. I love great coffee. And but I've learned to, instead of buying it every day at one of the coffee houses, I make it at home. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going without the things I love. I'm not depriving myself, but I'm still able to enjoy my coffee. And, you know, that's being strategic with my money, because that $5, $10 a day adds up.
It does. It does.
And
indeed.
Then I can put that into, like you were saying earlier, pay a bill. You'd be surprised with how many bills can be paid.
Exactly.
By just saving like that. Yes.
I know that there are others. There's this one woman I know who was very popular in the 80s and 90s. I think she might still be today, but she had a very rough edge to her presentation. She was genuinely trying to help people. Don't get me wrong. I got that. But it was her presentation that was difficult to handle, even though, yes, I am 100% responsible for the financial situation that I happen to be in at any given time. Nobody else. It's not the credit card companies. It's not the electric company or the mortgage company or anybody else. It's me, because of the choices that I made. And you made an interesting comment there about that, you know, your cup of coffee. Let's talk a little bit about this aspect of balancing the priorities, if you will, and maybe even looking at them a little differently, because actually another aspect of it was, I am grateful that even, you know, regardless of the balance in my checkbook, I am grateful that I'm actually able to pay the electric bill, and thank you, electric company, for providing me light and heat or cool air in my home. In other words, starting to be grateful and shifting away from the feelings of frustration over not having, but being grateful for having the ability to pay these things. And you say not denying yourself per se, but again, that whole aspect of the balance of, how many coffees would you have bought this week that would have paid, I don't know, maybe a tenth of your electric bill if your bill was $100 or whatever it was? Mm-hmm. gee, you know, if I hadn't had those coffees this week, and thinking, hey, you only can spend that dollar one time. So I think more about what I'm buying from that standpoint of, okay, if I get this, there are other things I'd like to get, and I can't if I buy this, which either way is okay, but which is more important? So let's talk about this issue of prioritizing and balancing all of that.
Yes, I would be happy to talk about that. And one of the things I would like to open by saying is that I speak in the book Mind Over Money, I speak about money from a very different perspective. It's not one that's we hear about often, and I talk a lot about emotional overspending. And I think I'm just such an emotionally sensitive person myself, so the rough edge is not going to work well with me. if I feel like I'm getting beat up, and it's so funny when my clients come and speak to me, I start holding their hand as opposed to hitting their hand, and they're shocked by it. And so we get the emotional side out of the way, because I think that is an aspect that we overlook in our culture. We underestimate how important our feelings are, and we also underestimate the role that spending and feelings play in our spending. Let me restate that. We don't always understand how important emotions are as it relates to our spending habits. And emotional overspending, I believe, is really the reason that some of us get into financial, you know, spending more than we should. Mm-hmm. One of the things about coffee relaxes me. I enjoy it. It relaxes me. And so I'm spending on it, not necessarily because I'm looking for the caffeine. I'm just, it feels good. It tastes good. I'm in good spirits, so I drink it. And that is what I want your listeners to take away, is that we don't have to sacrifice all the things we love. I mean, the title of my book is Mind Over Money, How to Live Like a Millionaire on Any Budget. Living like a millionaire on any budget does not mean deprivation mm-hmm. and going without the things you enjoy most, going without the things you love, sacrificing those things. How can you live a happy life that way?
Mm-hmm.
What we're suggesting is just being strategic with your spending, and like you were saying, setting priorities. We know that if we've got mortgage and utilities, we've got a household that we've got to maintain, so we need to have funds set aside for that. And I also believe we need to set aside funds for recreation. Even if that's, you know, and based upon where you are in your spending habits, you may not be able to travel this year, but it's still nice for you and the family to get away and, there, you know, do what I call staycations. You can have a beautiful time in your backyard. That just requires some creativity. And I mean, one of the things that I suggest, and we did this, it was so much fun, movie night at home. We went to a friend's. They had a big screen. We put it out on the lawn. We had dinner. We had food. We had drinks. And it was a lovely, lovely evening.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't giving up anything. Everybody walked away and said, oh, how much fun that is. So there are so many things that we can do just to enjoy life right where we are. And, of course, you have to be strategic with your spending. You set priorities. You need to have a spending plan, and because you do have to pay your bills and live and so on. But you certainly don't need to feel guilty about, you know, the fact that you overspent or you overindulged. It's just recognizing those things and then getting back on track. And that's what the book is all about, and showing you how to do that and even how to address emotional overspending, because there are things you can do to make sure you're distinguishing between, you know, strategic spending and emotional spending. And if there's an emotional thing going on, I show you how to address that and meet that need. And so you don't go and spend dollars, you know, unnecessarily.
Right, right. Well, yes. Obviously, this is a subject that is it's one of the big three, I guess, conversations that people don't like to talk about, because there is so much emotion tied up in it. It's funny. You talk about some of the things that we heard growing up, especially And again, I say this because I think it's something that's worth pointing out. When I was a kid growing up, I used to deliver newspapers in eighth grade and then all through high school. And I remember the thing I loved the most, and I have a terrible, terrible sweet tooth. And I loved Captain Crunch cereal.
Me too.
We definitely have something in common there. And I remember I would keep the cereal in one of my dresser drawers. I would buy the box, I'd bring it home, sneak it in, and so forth. And my parents found it one day. And they didn't say I couldn't have it, but they made the comment that I, you know, if I kept going down this road, I was going to be a butterball when I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason I bring that up is because I had the means to buy this cereal. My mom certainly wasn't going to buy it. She was always trying to give us healthy stuff. She never acknowledged the fact that she gave us a teaspoon of cod liver oil every morning before we went off to school. She said, I don't ever remember doing that. Hey.
Yes, I remember those. You're from the South?
Well,
that sounds like what they did.
Well, I suppose you could. I'm from the Southwest, but I'm still, I guess you could say I'm from the South, but not the true South down in the eastern part of the country. But the thing that struck me was that I had the ability to do this, but the choice that I was making, which of course I'm gonna say this facetiously, it led to harder stuff like soda.
Yeah. Yes.
And I'm still working to get off of that, but I've gotten much better. I really have. And I still, even to this day, I still have this terrible sweet tooth, and I just can't pass up certain things. But I still manage to I do fairly well, and so forth. But I know that this is a problem that a lot of folks have. They really struggle with it. They know that they should be eating better. And then of course this goes into another area too about eating better, but it costs so much more. But mm-hmm. there will be those who will say to you, I'm sure you've heard this, that yes, it's going to cost more, but how much more will it cost if you don't eat better? As far as your health care, that kind of thing.
Yes. One of my favorite statements is your health is your wealth. And no matter if you've got $1 billion and you're not healthy, you can't enjoy it. And it was so funny. I was having a conversation with a friend last night about this very subject. And so and I think the principles that you're talking about even applies to finances and all of and every aspect of our lives. You've got to being strategic with your health means eating healthy. Being financially healthy means making good financially healthy decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. I love Cap'n Crunch too, and I would eat that every morning. But it's not good for my waistline.
No.
It's not good for diabetes and all of these other things that come along with having that. That product on a daily basis or on a regular basis. And so that's where you have to make some tough decisions, and you have to decide, do I want to eat, to put good food in my body, to put good fuel in my body? Do I want to make decisions that lead to health, that leads to, a good well-being, mm-hmm. a good quality of life?
Yeah.
Or do I want to, just go down the road of, it tastes good right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it tastes good. It feels good, but it's not good for me.
Yeah.
And then I end up, spending a lot of time in the doctor's office because of the decisions I make. And sometimes it does come down to that. And sometimes we don't like to look at those decisions. It's like when you mentioned the B word in money, budget. Ooh, but we sometimes have to face the tough stuff.
Yeah.
In order to get better.
Exactly.
And what I like about how we do it is we do it in love. We do it we hold your hand and walk you through it.
Yeah.
Because, one of the paradigm shifts we talk about is that you can live and be as happy as millionaires and even billionaires. And a lot of that is what we're talking about, being strategic with money and taking good care of your health.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to go into a direction following the break that I don't know if you've touched upon this in this context. And this is for our listeners, of course. But we are talking with Mind Over Money author. Her name is Timelyn Langan, and she is the money magnet and teacherpreneur. This is basically Mind Over Money, how to live a millionaire, how to live like a millionaire on any budget. We'll also get into that as well here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Would you please stay tuned? There's cash in it for you.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we are so grateful and thankful that we have Timelyn on the phones with us here on the program to talk more about this whole aspect of mind over money, how to live like a millionaire on any budget. A teacherpreneur, I like that term. That's a new one that I have not heard before, but I like that. And I have to tell you, I can tell that you love teaching. I remember having the opportunity to do that back in the 80s and early 90s, back in Phoenix when I was working there and teaching at different broadcast schools. It was a thrill. It wasn't so much being up in front of people as much as it was sharing what I was passionate about. And you are definitely passionate about this subject of, do we want to say that you're passionate about money or that you're passionate about prosperity and abundance and all that comes along with that? And sometimes it is cold, hard cash.
Yes. Yes. And you know what? I am passionate about people living their best lives. And it does take having enough money to live the lifestyle of your choice. And the actual dollar amount varies from individual to individuals. Some people can do it very well with $50,000 a year, and some people need more. But it's not so much the dollar amount, but I'm just so passionate about people living a great life today and passing that on down to, you know, to the next generation. So that's where my heart is, and that's what I've been doing in the classroom for many years, and now I'm very excited to be doing it by way of this book and talking to your audience today. So it thrills me. I get very excited about this. I'm so, so passionate about it, and as you know, teachers are, no matter where you live in the world, you'll never hear teachers saying, oh, that teacher got rich teaching.
Mm-hmm.
It just does not happen. But I have been able to live a great life just being very strategic with the income that I've earned over the years. And so I tell people I love women's tennis. And one of the things I get to do is I get to travel the world because that's where my heart is. That's where my passion is.
Mm-hmm.
And so my financial planning and my strategic planning directs me to that. I forego the designer bags and the things of that nature so that I can travel. And I'm a huge women's tennis fan. And in January of 2017, this past January, I got to do something. It was one of my dreams fulfilled. I got to go to a major tennis event. I was at the Australian Open. I sat in the front row, right behind Venus Williams, and I got to see her match, and then I got to see, at that time, a pregnant Serena Williams play, and no one knew she was pregnant, and I'm sitting behind there in Rod Laver Arena watching this and just taking photos and taking pictures, and it was like, man, I can't believe I'm here. I've been watching women's tennis all of my life, and that was my very first major. It won't be my last. But that is where my passion is. I love to travel. I love to meet people. And I got to walk around the grounds and to be part of the festivities and to hear the music playing and to be part of the energy. And then at the end, to have it all end with Serena looking at me in my eyes and giving me the most beautiful smile. And here it is in December. I still think about that and get excited.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really, yeah, and that's the whole message of this book. I want people to live great lives and to be excited about the things they're doing and be strategic into making their dreams come true, too. That's it.
Well, I tell you, yeah, there are moments in my life too where, I mean, I have had so much fun doing the stuff I've been doing, and I used to say this, I haven't said it in a long time, only just because I haven't had time really, but it amazes me sometimes they actually pay me to do this kind of stuff. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Wow. And of course, they say as long as you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. I don't know that I necessarily agree fully with that per se, because there has been a lot of hard work that's gone into all of this, but it's all paid off in that respect. There is an aspect. Go ahead.
What a beautiful
no,
statement to make, though. I'm sorry to interrupt, but let's just absorb that for a moment. You get paid to do what you love. What a feeling!
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
What a feeling! What an accomplishment! And even if it's not you're not making $1 billion mm-hmm. doing it, you're doing what you love, and you're making a living from it.
Yeah.
And you're sharing the message with people all over the world. That's wonderful.
One of the greatest.
That's the living like a millionaire on your budget. Yeah. That's it. That's the message.
Yeah. Well, one of the experiences I had was on a Veterans Day 1999, and I was working for a radio station, and I was producing the morning show. I sat back behind the console, ran all the commercials, made the phone calls to the guests, and so on and so forth. And the program director a week earlier said, hey, we got Veterans Day coming up. We want to do a big show. Our morning show host, very intellectual, smart guy, smart as a whip, right? Not very emotional. He says, we want, through this show, we want to bring that emotion out in him, okay? We want to do that. So let's see what we can do, you know. And so Veterans Day came, come in at 5 a.m., 5:30, set up, and 6 o'clock, we're off and running, get the guests on, the music, and all the things, and we get to 10 o'clock into the next show, and it went flawlessly. And at the end of the program, the morning host, as he is wrapping up in the last 30 seconds, he starts to break down. And my first thought was back to what the program director said, we want to bring out the emotion in this guy. And I thought, yeah, but we didn't want to make him cry. Anyway, the program director, once we got into the news, he came into the program, into the control room, put his hand across the console and shook my hand, and he said, 4 stars.
Whoa.
And I tears well up in my eyes even now. I get misty because that was like one of those stellar moments that... I even have the program on CD at home, the whole 4 hours. But that was a time in my career that was just one of many that I look back on and say, wow, you know, and what else is coming, you know, and here we are talking about this whole aspect of money. I want to ask you, I don't know how much television you watch, but I'm sure you've seen the television shows of the people who live in these houses where when you open the front door, you can barely open the front door, and there's this skinny little path that moves through the house because there's stuff piled all the way to the ceiling. And if they have a two-story house, you're lucky to get up the stairs, and the same situation exists up there. And in every room in the house, in the garage. And the thought occurred to me, especially when we started hearing about these phrases about the 1%ers and the 99%ers. Correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe I have the wrong perspective on this. But those people who were in that category that was created, called the 1%ers, would you say that there is a danger that they have become hoarders of money? Because it's like, and again, I'm not, because to me, there's a double message from this country. On the one hand, the land of opportunity, you can make anything happen. You can make as much as you want. On the other hand, government says, and if you make above this amount, we're going to take more, kind of thing. And it's like, well, I don't know if I want to go that high. But what about this aspect of financial hoarding?
Wow. You know what? Hoarding is so funny too. I have a friend who works on a show called The Hoarder, and she goes into these people's home and they've got stuff piled up mountains and mountains high. Mm-hmm. But that is really, and from what I've learned from her, that's a psychological matter.
Mm-hmm.
That people would just kind of hoard and hoard and hoard and hoard. And so there's a lot more to it than I think in terms of just overspending based upon what I know about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that even us, whether you are a thousandaire, if you will,
mm-hmm.
we can live and be as happy as millionaires and even billionaires. And that's what I want your audience to know, that with our current financial situation, regardless of what that is, we can still live just as happily as they do. If your income is between $50,000 and $75,000 a year, your ability to be just as happy as you have the ability, by statistics, you can be just as happy as someone who makes millions and billions of dollars. That is really the threshold where income no longer matters or plays a role in happiness.
Okay.
And I thought that is really interesting, because we tend to think, oh, when we watch these TV programs where they're living in the big homes and they've got all the stuff, as you've just described,
mm-hmm.
and we think, oh, they're happy and we are not, or they're happier than us. Not necessarily. You can be just as happy as those people if you're making that income, $50,000 to $75,000 a year. And I go into the details of that in the book. But I just want people to realize that, because sometimes we think the grass is greener on the other side. Oh, I just need this. Oh, if I just had that. Well, there was an article in, I think it was called The Psychology of Money, and it states that it really only takes about $50,000 to $75,000 for a person to be genuinely happy, and that figure represents the point where having more money does not necessarily lend itself to being happier or to emotional well-being. So once you've gotten up into your $50,000 to $75,000, you can be just as happy as the next millionaire or billionaire. Income is no longer a factor in that matter.
You know, I've talked on this program an awful lot about one of my big dreams about this radio program. Getting a big RV, outfitting it with a small little recording studio, because you don't need much anymore, and traveling the world. And I've actually mapped out, starting at the tip of South America, working through all of those countries, up through Central North America, Canada, going across Alaska, and in the wintertime, crossing the Bering Strait, into Asia and Russia and Southeast Asia and on and on. And the only continent I'd have trouble with, of course, would be Antarctica and Australia. And working my way across this massive continent of India and Pakistan and so forth into Middle East and Europe and Africa. And then taking the channel to England, and then a ferry, put the RV on the ferry across to Ireland, where we would stop and stay for the rest of my life.
mm-hmm.
And
yes. Yeah.
And someone said to me, says, yeah, okay, that's a great dream, but are you willing to do the steps to make it happen?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that one of the problems we all have is that we already have so much going on in our lives today that,
mm-hmm.
well, I would if I had the time to do it. I mean, I'm dreaming big, you know, but I don't know that I have the time to make this happen. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know what? That really gets me into the fourth paradigm shift.
Please.
And where we have to take scientific formulaic strategies to achieve our goals. So if your goal is to travel in the manner that you've just received across the Bering Strait into Russia, mm-hmm. and Europe and, you know, Africa, et cetera, what does it take to do that? Let's look at that for a moment. Okay, here's the plan. You've got the big plan in place. This is what we need to do. This is what we want to go. How long will it take you to cover that? Maybe, what, a year? You take a year off for that?
Oh, I'm thinking.
That dream?
Well, I will tell you this, that it would take as long as it took, because once I start out, my end point, my end point would be Ireland. I'm not going back to the States. I would stay in Ireland until they bury me in a church somewhere.
If wow. they would.
That is, great. That's what I want to do. And my wife is sort of along the same lines, wants to do the same kind of thing. It could take 2 years, could take 5 years. I'm not interested in rushing it. Who knows? Maybe I'll only get to Ireland just in time to be buried, for all that mattered. But,
wow.
It's
where in Ireland would you want to go? Just curious, because I actually went to Dublin and had a beautiful time in Dublin.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a small town in County Waterford that we found this beautiful little bed and breakfast in a small little village called Lismore. Mm-hmm. And it's west of Waterford, east of Cork. And it's on the River Black. I think Blackwater. I can't remember if it's Black or Blackwater. It's been so long. We were there in 2002-03. We were there over Christmas and New Year's 1 year. And then the following year, 2004, we went there during my wife's birthday, which was February 2nd. And that would be where we would want to sort of set up shop. It's just a beautiful little community. The people all over Ireland. As a matter of fact, I met a Northern Irelander, I think that's right. Says, when I shared all these kinds of things, he says, okay, what is the number one thing that you love about Ireland? And he knew what my answer was going to be, even though I hadn't shared it with him. I says, the people. The people are just incredible. They're helpful. They're kind. I could sit in a pub and just listen to them talk without saying a word. It's just a wonderful place to be. And
I agree.
So, and we were in Dublin as well and flew in and stayed at a hotel not far from the airport. And we were driving around Dublin a couple of days after we'd gotten in, and somebody pulled over and asked us to pull over and said, are you folks lost? And they says, well, why would you say that? He says, because your turn signal is on and you're not turning anywhere. It was all very good. So let's talk about this in terms of the whole aspect of taking those steps. You were talking about the fourth paradigm.
Yes, and basically that suggests we take strategies and steps to achieve our goals. And one of the old paradigms is work harder and longer to get wealthier.
Yeah.
Well, the new form of thinking is to thinking wealthier will make you wealthier. And then I hit on the analogy earlier of the Mark Cuban analogy and all of that. And so the thing is about how do we take strategic steps to achieve our goals? And you're saying that you wanted to travel, you know, the mm-hmm. world for a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, maybe some other person's goal is to write a book or to, I don't know, whatever the goal is. I just feel like we have to really kind of sit down and create a strategy to help one another accomplish those goals. And so that's kind of what I do. It's like when my goal is to travel, I start thinking about, okay, this is the place that I want to go. And then I start looking around and finding different books and, you know, learning about the area and where I want to stay, you know, get some idea of what the accommodations are going to be, start just kind of strategizing airfare and so on. And you start in time. You give yourself enough time, especially when you're operating on a budget. you know, it takes some planning to do this, and you just give yourself the proper amount of time to plan and strategize and then stick to those money goals. If you need to set aside X number of dollars per month to achieve that goal, then you have to be pretty dedicated to making that happen and to doing that every month.
Absolutely.
Or every week. And I highly recommend having a recreational budget.
Mm.
Have a recreational budget, just like you've got a budget for your household and your transportation. Have a budget for recreational needs, too, because we don't want to, we've got our needs that we take care of in reality. You know, in the classroom, we talk a lot about realia. Realia would be household, transportation, gas, et cetera. And then there's recreational, because you've got to have some fun. Remember, we're going to live like a millionaire on our budget. That means having a good time. So you put money aside for that. And then retirement, don't forget that one. Because someday you'll get to an age where you won't be able to work, and then you want to make sure you have your retirement plans set aside as well. So that's the time to do that now, is to put those strategies in place and just start putting a little money into each one of those accounts on a monthly basis. It doesn't hurt.
Well, I have to say that there's one aspect that I find interesting, and that is the whole concept of retirement didn't exist many, many years ago. It wasn't something that we did just as a people globally, let alone in the United States. I mean, you lived, you worked, you died, and there was no retirement. Today, when people talk to me about retirement, they ask me, and my mother actually did ask me about my retirement. I have nothing. I have zero because I have no plans on the only retiring I'm going to do is on my Volvo or the car that I happen to own at any given time, putting new tires on, right? That's it.
Yes.
Because I'm hoping that, you know, and I realize this will be an awful scene for the person that finds me. They will peel my cold dead carcass off of the console because I died while working.
And you know what? I honestly like that thought, too. You never really retire, because retirement, it suggests you're no longer here. That's when you retire. So as long as you're here,
right,
you're going to be doing something.
Yeah.
And so you just want to make sure you have enough income to do it. That's
sure.
all.
And I have to say that there are a number of people I've spoken with who have retired. And I mean, they've actually stopped working. They're living off of whatever it is that they've either saved, or Social Security or pension or whatever it is. And especially the guys, they are bored out of their minds. So they've got to go do something. And that is why my father, I love him so much. He's still alive today. He's 86. He'll be 87 in 2018. Told me many years ago, he says, be sure that you find a job you love to do, because you're going to be doing it for a long time. Don't get stuck like me. Now, when he said that, he felt he was stuck. But then in the 70s, I think this was in his 30s or early 40s, he went back to junior college and got his computer programming degree. And of course, we were getting fanfold paper and punch cards, all kinds of stuff like that all over the house when he started going to school. But he made a change in his life. And so he passed that on to me. And I don't know. I just feel like I was very fortunate. I feel like I fell into it. It wasn't as much something that was chosen. Maybe it was the law of attraction. But I think that that's another aspect, too, in terms of facing your retirement or your later years, maybe is a better way to put it, because we're all, from the moment we're born, actually from the moment that we're created, the two cells come together, we're going to die. Somewhere down the road, we're leaving this world. And my great-grandmother on my mother's side lived to be 100 years old. And when she was in her 90s, I used to tell people I was going to outlive her, but she was making it really hard. And when she did pass, I thought, oh, okay. Well, it's a hell of a goal to have to achieve, but I'm going to shoot for it. And so I want to make sure that my health is good and I'm doing the best that I can. You know, not always the best, but I'm doing what I can, and I'm, you know, I'm living by the ocean, which is what I've always wanted to do. I've been trying to get to the sea for several decades, and finally made it in 2006. And so there are certain things that have come about, and I know a lot of people are feeling the same way, that I've got all of these ideas, these dreams, these aspirations, these desires to do these things. What would you say would be the first step for someone to make that shift right now, this moment? If I was still living in Phoenix and I asked you that same question, it's not like, okay, and right now I want to be by the ocean. Okay. That does not happen. Doesn't happen that way. But in terms of getting the universe or getting on board with the universe, not getting the universe on board with us, where do we start? What's the very first baby step we need to take?
Wow, this is such a great question. When you have ideas and aspirations, how do you start? And the thing is, you know what popped into my head as you were talking? If you want something you've never had, it's time to do something you've never done. You're going to have to take contrary action. And the old paradigm is to repeat what you're doing harder and longer. That's the normal, to just do the same thing over and over again. But in this new world, this new day, this new idea, take different actions to get different results or to get the result you want. So that would be about that. So in terms of making your dream a reality and bringing it into fruition, whatever that it is, sometimes especially we as working people, we have to think outside the box. We've got to think outside of the norm. It's like, how do I, you know, I've been doing this a certain way for years, and this is the result that it's gotten me. What new step can I take this time around? What new approach can I take to help me get closer to my goal? If I'm going to travel the world, I know I'm going to need X number of things. Why don't I start putting those things in place now and taking those strategic steps now so that in 2 years I can indeed travel the world or I can indeed pursue this idea and pursue this aspiration? You know, and then study the mindset of people you admire and who are already doing it, who are having the kind of success you want. And sometimes I'm pretty good with managing my budget, but I listen to other people who are wealthier and who are having financial success that I want to have, who share the same values and belief system that I have. And these are, you know, friends in my head. These are not necessarily people I know. And I just kind of study the steps they've taken to get to the level where they are. And so I would suggest the same thing. Number one, think outside the box. Number two, study the mindset of people you admire and who are achieving that kind of success. And then just kind of model them and read 30 minutes a day. And I say that to my students, and I do this as well. I read and study 30 minutes to an hour every single day, so that I can have, you know, just to increase my knowledge and my wisdom so that I can achieve my goal. And then apply one tip a day. Whatever you learn, you can't do it all at once. You don't want to be overwhelmed, because if you start trying to take on 3, 4, and 5 extra things in your day, slowly you revert to old habits. So implement one technique per day, one technique per week. And you'd just be surprised at how quickly you can achieve your goal. And, of course, you know, I'm just speaking more in general, but each goal has a specific set of steps and parameters that one would need to follow. But certainly that's in kind of a general way of looking at things.
Well,
a general approach.
Yeah. And I know there are a lot of things that happen in this world, and I take a look and I question. The one question that always seems to come to my mind when I'm watching these people pursuing this, that, or the other, whatever it is, for better or for worse, richer or poorer, is what is the end game for these people? What is it that they're trying to achieve? And I'm curious to that, as far as mind over money, again, my observation is there is no end game, but let's use that term from your perspective. How would you describe the end game of mind over money?
You know, you're absolutely right. There is no end game per se. I basically wrote that book to share the wisdom and the information that I've learned along the way. People often ask me questions, well, how are you doing this on a teacher's salary? Where on a teacher's salary? You're doing, you know, you've bought property on a teacher's salary? Yes. And so the end game for me is I want to help people transform their financial life from surviving to thriving. I really want them to live like a millionaire on their budget, to live their life by design and not default. And that could mean a number of different things, you know, because you were saying everyone's got different ideas and different dreams, different aspirations. I want to encourage you to pursue them. And I want to encourage you to take strategic steps in making that happen. And your money is a tool. That's all it is. It is a tool. It is a resource for you to implement those things you've been dreaming of. It's the building block. It's the building block for your vision.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we wrote the book, to show you how to do it, to share information and techniques that I've used, that I've implemented, that have worked well for us working people. And so that's the end game, if you will.
Yeah. I know that in our lives as human beings, you know, we complicate and complicate. We want to make it complicated, you know. Instead of just going from point A to point B, we'll add 7,000 other steps to the process. For whatever reason, it seems like, well, yeah, but if there aren't 7,000 other steps, it's not meaningful, it isn't valuable, it isn't important. Because if it's just step A to step B, what is that? There's nothing to that. It can't be that simple. And I think that we do tend to struggle with that.
Yeah, and you know what? And when we get it, when it becomes too complicated, then we get overwhelmed.
Yes,
like, oh
yes.
My gosh, it's too big, and I can't do it. And so it's really like seed planting. You plant that tiny seed in the ground, and the most important thing, if you want a lemon seed, plant lemons. If you want an apple seed, just make sure you're planting apple seeds. So sometimes we'll plant an apple seed, and then we get a lemon and think, oh, my gosh, what happened here? So plant the seed you want and be very particular about that and specific about it. Plant that seed and just take a little time to water it every day, and then the seed will grow. And I don't, you know, again, the seed varies, but it will indeed grow. And it's easier to just, it's like with me, for example, I want to exercise. That's my goal for 2018, is to start a regular exercise program. And with me, what I will do is I'll go to the gym and I'll work out 2 hours in a day. But that's too much to take on in one day, and then I won't go back. It'll be another 3 weeks before I get to the gym again.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends will tell me, do 30 minutes a day.
Mm.
You're better off 30 minutes a day, 3 times a week, than to do 2 hours in one day and get burned out and not go back for another month.
Yeah.
And so it's the same with implementing your vision, your plan. Just start small. If it's just one tiny item per day that you do, do one little thing per day.
Yeah.
One little thing per week. And you'll see that the little things add up and they become big things.
Let me ask you about intuition. What role does that play?
Intuition. I think there's something inside of us all. There's an internal compass, if you will, that sort of guides our lives. And I think we know when we're in touch with that. I think it goes back to what we opened the conversation with, that Hanok, or however we say it in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
It's that little thing inside of you that you're born to do, and if you're not doing it and if you're not making progress in that area, you know it. You feel it very deep in your soul. And it's the same with writing this book. I did not want to write the book. I ran from it. People were saying, oh, you need to write a book. And I had contributed to a friend's book. And I just didn't want to do it because I just had some challenges in life with writing before, and I just put that on the back burner. But there was something stirring in me so deeply that I simply could not sleep. I could not sleep until I committed to writing the book. And once I wrote the book, was it hard to write? No, it wasn't hard to write. The material just poured out of me. What was hard was organizing it in such a way, and I read something on Facebook that really put it in so nicely and succinctly. Writing a book that's easy for others to read is hard to do. It's hard work writing a book that's easy for others to read. And that is what we wanted to do with Mind Over Money. I wanted to keep it short, sweet, and easy to read, easy to understand, and key things that people, that's easy for people to do. And so that was my whole thing with the intuition. Make it easy, make it fun, make it simple. Don't overwhelm yourself with it. Take baby steps, small steps, but consistent steps, persistent steps daily, and you'll achieve your goal. You'll get there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly encourage people to pick up a copy of your work, because I think that what is happening to us today in this day and age, things are changing. I mean, there are I guess the term is millennials, the younger folks behind me and you. They've got their own ideas. They've got new and different ideas. They're not buying into and accepting just the way that it's always been. And so they seem to be a little bit more. I'm hearing, for example, regarding housing. They don't want to necessarily own. You know, it's like I took the philosophy not long ago. You know what? You've got to pay to live somewhere, whether you own or rent. What difference does it make? And you can't take it with you, so what difference does it make if I own it? And if I rent it, I don't have to worry about it. Somebody else gets to deal with that. But, you know, you have to, and if I was wanting to live in an RV the rest of my life, I got to pay for that too. But, you know, you've got to pay for the place in which you dwell. You've got to pay for the food that you eat, all these different things. Before we wrap this up, let me ask you about the whole aspect of receiving the prosperity and or the wealth and so forth, the willingness to do this, because you know as well as I do that there are those who will use such phrases as, I don't accept charity. I'm sorry, I don't care if the house is burning down. You are not going to put it out with your fire hose, or you're not going to feed my kids. We don't take charity. I'm too proud to do that, and so on and on and on. It's like, sorry for the southern accent. I'm just trying to make you feel at home.
I'm a southerner myself. This is fun for me. I feel right at home.
But what about
y'all? All right.
That's right. But what about that? The giver and the receiver, the giving and the receiving, that equation on a universal level in terms of those who do feel that way.
Wow. You know what? I do believe that there's a time to do both. I think there's a time to sow seed, and then there's a time to, receive. And I think that we're in different roles at different times in our lives. Yes, and it's so funny too, because I'm one of those people who found it hard to receive. I would give to loved ones. I would do a lot of emotionally overspending and giving to loved ones and family members and doing things beyond what my responsibilities were, financially speaking. And I would have a tough time receiving. And so I'm learning that there's a balance, and that, I just as sometimes we drive a car and sometimes we're the pedestrian, I think it's okay to be in both situations. Because, you give and receive. It's just the cycle of life, and it's okay. And at some point, we're going to be one or the other. So I see that as a good thing. I see it as a good thing, and sometimes ego can get in there, and so we want to keep ego to the side because it's nice to receive. I celebrated a birthday, and a friend took me to a very lovely, lovely place. You know, my first reaction would be to say no. Oh, I can't receive that. Oh, it's too much. And then I decided, you know what? God said, just go. Just be obedient in that regard and receive.
Mm-hmm.
Freely you have given, freely receive.
Yeah.
And I think that's nice. And if you've given and you've, sown seed into other people's lives, I think it's okay for you to let them sow a little something into your life. And you can be on the receiving end of something wonderful, too. And I think that's what a good life consists of doing both, giving and receiving.
Yeah, I know, too, that when we go through certain natural disasters, for example, the 2017 hurricane season and California's fire season, which is now year-round, that people literally, they come out of the woodwork to help and to to support one another. I thought it was an interesting comment because I was watching the whole thing unfold in Texas when Hurricane Harvey hit. And, you know, well, this is the special, this is just a special breed for Texans. You know, that's just what we do. And the one thing that struck me was like, well, yeah, but you're not the only ones. You know, other states can make the same claim of their people. And I think that as a country, and again, as a country of people, forget the government, it's the people of this country who have poured out their hearts and their wallets to help people who are in need around the world, whether it's problems in Haiti or Puerto Rico or wherever else there is a need. You know, we're there, and we've even received from other countries as well. And it's always the people, you know, that are that focal point of that energy, of that giving. And it helps us to, you know, I mean, we've been recipients here in Santa Barbara of the kindness of not so much strangers, good friends, but nonetheless, who let us stay in their home in the summer of 2017 when we were, for the very first time, evacuated from our home due to a fire. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we didn't sit there going, oh, no, we appreciate it, but no, thank you. And we actually received more than one offer, but we had already accepted one, so we were gracious in our thanks, but having to turn someone down. And that's another hard thing too. It's like, well, so you don't want to stay with me? You know, some people they can get a little indignant when you're not willing to receive. It's like, well, but I already have, you know, I already have I've been given, and I'm grateful for that. But maybe next time, you know, I hope there isn't one. But you know, and it does happen. It does happen, and.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying is just right on. We I love to travel, but I also love to come home. And we Americans are so giving and so kind. It's like when we experience these natural disasters, whether it's the hurricanes or the fires, it is just amazing how we come together as a people and as a nation to help our fellow man.
Absolutely.
I know I've got a dear friend who opened her home and said, you know, if you're struggling, you need a place to stay because of the fires, come on down.
Yeah.
I've got someone staying with me now who's just fallen on hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like we open our doors to people, and especially this time of the year, it's like this is the real meaning of the season. I think is just when we can lend a helping hand to someone in need, and we will always be blessed for that. We will always be blessed for that.
Yeah.
So it's beautiful. Beautiful.
I want to thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us on this program. I know we've scratched the surface, which is always the case, but we encourage our listeners to go to your website. And just so that we can remind our listeners of that website, excuse me, it is Live Like a Millionaire. Is it Live Like a Millionaire Now?
.com.
.com.
Yes. Yes, people can reach out to us at livelikeamillionairenow.com. We've got some exciting things planned for 2018 to just assist people and to come alongside people on their financial journeys for the new year. So we're so excited, and it's, yes, livelikeamillionairenow.com.
Well, we thank you so much. And before we let you go, we would like to ask you three final questions, as we would like to, and also to extend to you an invitation should you find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, smoke-free, we hope. We encourage you, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Oh, I'd love to come down. As a matter of fact, Santa Barbara is one of my favorite places in L.A., so you've got it. We'll be in touch about that.
Absolutely. That'd be great. That'd be great.
Yeah.
And finally, three final questions as we wrap up. And again, our thanks to our special guest here on the program. She's just really been great to extend to us so much time. Timberland Langan is our guest, and the money paradigm shift is what we're talking about. But of course, it's more than that. It's really to live like a millionaire now.com is the website. And we encourage you to pick up a copy of the book, Mind Over Money. Final three questions. First of all, who is Timelon Langan?
Timelon Langan is a young woman on a mission to live life to the full.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I really believe so passionately in the message, and I just want to see other people do the same thing. I would like to, see people go from living life by default and living life by design. I want them to live the life of their dreams.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to help you get there, is to show you how to do it, to show working people everywhere how to live like a millionaire on their budget.
Timberlyn Langan, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Again, Mind Over Money and LiveLikeAMillionaireNow.com, the website, and we look forward to talking to you again very soon and continuing this conversation, either on the phone or in person. And again, our great thanks to you.
Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.